thanks for joining us for the Changing the Industry podcast, where we try to effectuate change for the better, one conversation at a time. Part of that change is providing help for those that need it. This is why we've partnered with the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. Whether it's help with sales, operations, or just getting your numbers in order, these folks are some of the very best in the industry. And for our listeners, they'll sit down with you and go over your strengths, your weaknesses, and the opportunities that are in front of you. They'll create a customized plan for how to move forward absolutely free. That's right, free. And if your plan includes one-on-one coaching, they can also help you with that. There's no hard sales pitch, no obligation, just honest help from honest people. So if that's something that you think could benefit you, make sure you click on the link in the show notes. And now, on to the show. Oh, now six. That's six shows now.
Sure.
Five or six shows. Okay. You need help doing it?
Yeah, for sure.
We'll handle it.
It's going to be me and my wife. We're going to... So what we want to do a podcast where we're going to talk about the couples, you know, couples.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. Husband, wife, but I want to talk about the dynamic stuff, you know, talk about being in business together. But everyone always hears about all the nice stuff. I want to talk about the struggles.
Amen, buddy.
Yeah. I feel like that's going to be important.
That is a tough aspect of business ownership when you are working with a spouse. And you know, a good friend of mine, we've been talking for a while now about having him on, and we've been back and forth on whether he actually feels comfortable doing that or not, because it just about resulted in the end of a marriage, right?
Yeah.
And it was a situation where he was stressed out and things weren't always going like the way he envisioned.
Yeah.
And so when he went home, he wasn't the husband or the father that he should be. And little by little, it eroded the relationship, right? And he didn't realize that it was doing it, and she didn't realize that it was doing it, but they had kids.
Yeah.
And so it eroded to the point that it created this massive blow up, right? And I think about that all the time because I've just about done that a couple times, right? And not realized it. Being in business with a significant other is hard work, dude. Really hard. And I'm going to tell a personal story. She's going to kick my ass if she ever listens to this episode. And I feel terrible about it now. And she says she doesn't hold it against me, but I feel like she still, like, if we talk about it, it upsets her.
Yeah.
My wife worked in the shop, and she always said that men treated her differently when it came to like buying service and things like that. And that didn't bother her. But there was this guy who had been a family friend for years, and he came in and he was just coming by to like say hello or speak and you know, say, hey, I hadn't seen you in years. You know, I've known this guy since I was a little kid. And he walked behind the counter and he gave my wife a hug. Now, I didn't think anything about it. It didn't cross me as weird. It didn't seem anything like that. But later, she said, the way that he hugged me and the way that that interaction felt, I felt extremely uncomfortable. And without thinking about it, I defended him, saying, nah, this guy's like a super Christian guy. He would never do anything weird. He would never anything like that. And dude, that one stupid little comment that I made, because the way it played out in her head, it sounded like I didn't believe her, right?
Yeah.
And so you think about relationships, and now we're working together. Those tiny little things make a huge impact, and you don't even realize you've done it. Hold on.
What was she expecting you to do?
I don't think that it... She did not have expectations for me to do anything because it was already over, right?
I get that, but like, I'm trying to like think, how would I react to that? And I'd be like, nah.
Well, so it was... Long story short, what happened with this guy is shortly after this encounter, he died. And he had something in his brain, like an embolism or something. Mm-hmm. And they suspect, because he started acting like really crazy right around the same time, he went to like all of these, like he went out west to some sort of festival, music festival, and he's acting completely different than he had ever acted before. So they suspect something changed in his brain before this happened, right? But I think what she wanted was, is she wanted me to hear her say, that made me feel uncomfortable. She didn't expect an answer from me. She didn't expect me to say something. But she also didn't expect me to defend him. She just wanted me to listen to her, right?
I get that.
So what I did was, is I invalidated the fact that she felt that way.
Yeah, you're an ass. I get that part. I don't know that I would be like, what? No, really?
Yeah.
I didn't believe in her.
Right.
But well, also what was he doing?
Yeah. Well, and it was like a super long embrace and was a very, he was saying things in her ear that Not like that. But, and you know,
if he pulled in and it wasn't ass out, you know how you hug somebody, you stick your ass out.
Yeah.
And if you pulled in and all of a sudden I probably would have noticed and been like, bro, you okay? What are you doing? Yeah. Why are you squeezing so hard? But if he was also like in her ear, whoa.
Yeah. It was definitely weird. There was no doubt about it. I guess what I'm trying to highlight is my response to it.
You're an idiot. That's what you're trying to highlight.
Yeah, absolutely. I could have told you that. I don't know why we even have to establish
that. You handled that all wrong. You probably told the story before. I just don't remember it.
No, I don't think
What's
I have.
Wrong with you? You should feel worse about it now that you told me about it than you did all the way up to this point.
But the cool thing is, we're going to talk about that, but then as well,
the
wife that stays at the house and, you know, business owners that come home at 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, long hours.
Yeah.
Working 6 days, 7 days a week, those kind of struggles. That's what we really want to talk about.
Well, I mean, think about how many in our trade are doing that right now. Think about how many in our trade that are technicians turned owners, especially, mm-hmm. that they think the way the business is going to be successful is by fixing all the cars.
Yeah.
And that's not how it works, right? You can fix all the cars in the world and not be successful.
Yeah.
And so, especially in the infancy of the business, I think that's really important to hear that. And I think you've got a massive platform. I mean, you'll get people to listen just because it's you. So I think that's an awesome idea.
Yeah.
Before we dig all the way in, you've done a lot of really cool stuff for a lot of people in this industry.
Let him introduce himself because we're 6 minutes in and all we heard was your stupid story about you being an idiot.
Well, I'm trying to do this so you cut that part out so she never hears it.
Lucas and I have been telling you about Parts Tech for a while now and how it gives you access to unlimited parts and tire vendors and direct integration with over 35 shop management systems. And now they've just launched a new referral program. All you have to do is open your Parts Tech account, go to My Shop, and click on the Rewards tab. There you'll find your referral URL, which you can share via email, text message, or on your social media. If your referral signs up for a new account and places 5 orders in the first 30 days, Parts Tech will send you a $100 gift card. That's it. Nothing else is needed. Your referrals can get you $100 just for using Parts Tech, which, by the way, is absolutely free to get started with. So if you're using Parts Tech already, start sharing that referral link. And if you haven't signed up for Parts Tech yet, what are you waiting for? Click on the link in the description or go to partstech.com/podcast. That's partstech.com/podcast.
Hey, one more thing. If you find out that your shop management system doesn't integrate with Parts Tech, it's time to upgrade. David and I use what we believe to be the very best system on the market, Shopware. With unmatched features like Parts GP Optimizer and DVX, which is their digital vehicle experience, Shopware really is way more than just a shop management software. With it, you'll be able to create an immersive and interactive experience for your client, setting you apart from everyone else using run-of-the-mill software. Are you ready to upgrade? Click the link in the show notes to get started.
Is that us?
Did you think she'd be upset by that story?
She probably would.
Really?
Probably.
Why could. Though?
Well, because it just reminds her of what an ass I am.
I think she knows.
It would probably make it worse.
And it's just funny because really? My wife tells me the same thing. Sometimes I just need you to listen. That's it.
Yeah, dude.
Just listen.
Yeah. Well, and we need a reminder of that.
Listen, don't fix.
Because we're fixers.
Yeah, we're fixers. No, that's what we do.
Yeah, that's what I tell her. I'm like, let's do it this way. No, I just want you to listen. I know you're trying to fix up stuff.
Do you scream back at her? Go, quit trying to change me.
No,
no, because he's not trying to get killed.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Introduce yourself.
No, so my name is, my actual name is Asael Sepulveda, and everyone.
So you nailed it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Boop. Can you show the world how you nailed it? Because I'm not going to be able to say that ever. Like, it's Oz.
Yeah, okay. That's why everyone calls me Oz. It's just easier. And it's kind of funny how I got that name. It was during, I think, high school.
Yeah.
There's a teacher that every time that we had a substitute teacher, I knew they were coming up to my name because they just kind of looked at the roll sheet and they just
they're stopped. Struggling.
Yeah, they just stopped. And the funny thing is, they just called everyone by their first name. They tried my first name, butchered it, and they're like, let me try the last name. I'm like, please, go to the next version, please.
That's me, bro.
That's me. No, yeah, when I would see him struggle, that's when I raised my hand. That's me. I said it. And that
is awesome.
That was extremely funny. But there's this one substitute teacher. He was like a rocker guy.
Yeah.
And he looks at it. He's like, dude, I'm going to call you Ozzy.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
He's like, do you mind if I can call you Ozzy? I'm going to be here for a whole week. And I just looked at him and I was like, yeah, if you want to. So that's how Oz Mechanics started. Yeah, it was pretty cool. So from there, that's when my friends would call me Ozzy. And then when I finally opened up my shop, I sat down and I was trying to think of different names. My dad wanted Sepulveda Automotive or Sepulveda Shop or whatever. And I was just like, Dad, if the teachers were struggling,
yeah,
I can just imagine someone trying to look up my shop and let's go to Sepultura. Like everyone, that's what they say.
Right.
I'm like, I don't have a T in my, but so my friend came up to me and he was like, hey, Oz. He would call me Oz. He's like, why don't you just call it Oz Mechanics?
Yeah.
And it was just like,
And it's become a household name, especially for YouTubers, right?
Yeah.
David did nail it. I'll give him credit. He absolutely nailed it. You did.
I know I did. Anyway, let's move on past the name.
Anybody ever tell you you get on my nerves? Do you get on everybody else's nerves or is it just me?
You going to invalidate my feelings too? Is that how this is going to work?
Pretty much. Absolutely.
But that's what you need in the podcast. You need that.
Yes.
Tom and Jerry kind of.
You think
thing.
That's it? No.
Yes.
No. That's not it.
No. See, it can't be that because Tom is the violent one and you know powerful and capable.
And Jerry is a smart one. You laid into that. And you went. Wait. Hold on. Now this analogy is not going to work. I just threatened him on the last podcast recording, so I'm obviously the violent one, and then Jerry's the smart. That's not going
to
work.
No, I was getting ready to say, and you're neither one of those things. Didn't let me get to the punchline.
No, that fell apart. Is all I'm saying. That fell apart.
And so tell us a little bit about what it is, who you are, because most of our listeners already know who you are. Mm-hmm. But you got pretty popular on this thing called YouTube. Tell us how that happened.
Well, if everyone, pretty much everyone knows of Paul Danner, Scanner Danner.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it literally started off with that. I was watching one of his videos, and I got to the point where I was like, dude, if he helped me out, let me see if I can help out one person out there.
Yeah.
So that's where I got, you know, got the idea to at least make one video. Did I butcher that video? Yes. I called ahead an engine block. So please, no one go over there and watch that first video. Don't do that. And that was actually, it was putting time certs in a North Star engine, a Cadillac. So,
oh, man.
And dude, I went just head first, just straight to.
We're gonna drop that in. Can we drop that into this video when we post
it?
That's a lot of editing. I don't want to do that.
It's just I just remember just rewatching it. I'm calling it a block, and I'm just like, hopefully, not a lot of people have been. They didn't bring that up on the video. Now they are.
But right, they're gonna go back and watch it.
Jesus, dude, that was just that was a horrible video. But going back to it, it was just it was a snowball effect, man. Just getting those comments and, hey, thank you for the help, advice, this, this, and that. And it's just a wonderful thing, man. I really do enjoy it. We could say there's videos out there that I would not recommend watching. Kilmer.
There you go.
Don't say that name three times because it's like he'll the boogeyman. He'll pop up. Yeah.
He'll show up.
Yeah, he'll pop
he's
up.
He's an entertainment. He's not.
He's a smart guy. Damn, I can't believe I'm saying he's a smart guy. He's a smart individual.
He's a YouTuber.
Because what he does, and this is every technician that I talk to, he tells the masses what they want to hear. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, I didn't realize that until I was watching, when someone commented on my video, and they're like, why are you wasting my time? I don't have a scope.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a $10,000 scan tool. I don't have this, this, and that. Right. I don't have all the fancy equipment. It's like,
why does this matter to me?
Yeah, why does this matter to me? But Kilmer, he basically, everyone can relate to him.
Yeah. You know? Well, and I think you're right. As an entertainer, he's brilliant, right? Because he's figured out exactly what to do. And I think to a degree, a lot of it is just satire, right? Because isn't he's like on the Picoscope deal, right? Isn't he on Auto Nerds?
Dude, I haven't watched this.
Isn't Scotty Kilmer like involved with Auto Nerds or something?
Are you messing?
No, what? I'm saying
I really don't know.
I don't either, but people were bringing it up the other day. We were talking about it in a chat, and it was that he's actually a very, very accomplished technician, and that this is all just satire, that's just how he rolls.
That sounds like an internet theory. Like,
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's true or not.
No, the thing is, and this really ticked me off one time.
Yeah?
A customer showed up to my shop. And he rolls into my shop and he's like, hey, you're Oz. And then we introduced ourselves this and that. And he's like, hey, I just want you to look at my car, see if you can fix it up. And I was like, for sure. And then he starts just bawling, just telling me stuff. He's like, dude, so I'm bringing my car over here because I took it to Scotty Kilmer and he couldn't fix it.
Do what?
And I was like, okay.
They're both in Houston.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but.
No, now he's in Tennessee. He left Houston.
Right.
And so while he's telling me his whole story, he's like, dude, the messed up thing that he did is after I picked up my car 2 days later, he makes a video about my car and basically just talky mess about it.
Holy crap.
Yeah. What kind of dummy is going to put, you know, a spoiler? What kind of dummy is going to put an air intake? This, this, and that, just bashing
that it. That screwed up.
And then the customers, while he's telling me this whole thing, he's like, hey, I didn't put this. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I didn't do none of that. So he's telling me all this. And I'm like, dude, I don't care what you put on your car.
Right.
I'm
that's your business, bro.
Yeah, I'm just here to fix it up. That's it. I don't care what you have on there. I'm here to fix it up. So I did record the video. And it was just a mass airflow sensor. That's all it was. Simple. Any technician can do this.
Yeah.
But Scotty, he got to the point where he was just like, I'd rather get a little bit more, you know, recognition, more views just by making this video and talking mess about this car than
even working on the car or fixing the cars. That's screwed up. That's really screwed up.
It makes sense. Like, you're going to... They're just props.
Yeah.
You're not there to, you're not a shop. You can't be a shop. Like, you can't do what he does. The amount of editing. Do you do a lot of editing in your videos? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So David goes.
Work. Yeah, I just hit, I post. That's it. Plop, post, done.
It's just YouTube is, it's difficult, you know? To me, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
You have so many subscribers that you're trying, or so many people out there that you're trying to, you know, get that certain group. And especially in what we do, all the technical stuff, you have the small niche right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a huge YouTube channel, but you're also like in a small niche. You're not Scotty Kilmer size. You see what I'm saying? Like, you're not Donut Media.
Yeah.
They're not making content for who you serve.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
like your audience is technically minded. They're actually mechanics. They actually work on cars. They work in shops. These people just want entertainment. So Scotty's just putting, he just needs a prop. So it was just that guy's car.
And you know, we talked about that yesterday, is some content creators are trying to make that shift from funny and irrelevant content that gets tons of views to serious content.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hard road to hoe, right? Because like trying to switch to where you're providing that value and having, you know, people take you seriously, like Scotty Kilmer tried to make the flip. That's never going to happen, right? Nobody's going to watch it. All those subscribers that have signed up would never.
He does those videos where he's like talking about cars, like he's answering subscriber questions. Those do pretty well.
Do they?
Well, it's, most of his questions are just, well, he'll talk about a certain line or he'll say, oh, you know, GM is not doing good or this, this, and that. Yeah. And he'll have one of those. But you know who's really doing good? Eric from South Main Auto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love his channel.
And so I did call him one time and I was like, Eric, how can I get to your level? And he's like, Oz, you're doing good.
Yeah.
But he's like, just do what you're doing and it's going to get there. But I went to this one event in Vegas, you know, Pat Ben David and all them.
Yeah.
So they had an event.
Valuetainment.
Yeah. So they had an event. It was like a mastermind event, but then they had YouTubers as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Dude. So it was, it was really nice because I was going there for the financial purpose, but then I found out that the YouTubers were there as well. And they're giving all these tips and so on.
Right.
And what really hit home, I was just like, the way this one guy, I think his name is Pat Flynn.
Yeah.
Pat Flynn.
Smart passive income. Yeah.
Yeah. So what he was talking about is whenever you have a channel, imagine watching The Simpsons and all you have is Homer Simpson.
Yeah.
How boring is that gonna get for, you know, 10 years?
Right.
10 seasons. No, you need to have those peripherals. You need to have that Barney, that Lisa, the Bart.
That rounded out.
Yeah. And that's what Eric O is doing.
Yeah.
He brings his daughter, the dog's there, Sheba. You got his wife, different characters that come in. Mm-hmm. And then as well, you have to be relatable to your audience. So what does Eric say? Oh, I love ice cream. What do people send him?
Ice cream. Yep.
You know, he has his hats. You know, people send him hats. That kind of
that
stuff.
That's a really good point. Super valid point.
Are you trying to get free hats? Is that what the deal is?
No, he was trying to get me to say something about bourbon, so I got free bourbon.
You have gotten free bourbon.
I know, it's awesome. It's fantastic.
We're a tiny channel compared to you, obviously, but we get free bourbon.
Dude, that's the thing. Just bring it up. Or
he doesn't drink bourbon, so I'd get the bourbon. Actually, it's probably rolling around in the back of his van.
It is rolling around in the back of my van.
Yeah, well, everyone knows me as a tequila guy. We talked about it downstairs. Yep. It was really funny. So the first event I came to, I just had one shot of tequila. They know I'm Mexican, so they just went along with it. So every time I would come to an event, everyone's like, oh, there's a tequila guy. The first time I met Paul.
Yeah.
It was at a big event. And, you know, I looked up to this guy.
Yeah, we all did, man. Like he was like the catalyst of so much of what's happening in our industry right now.
Yeah.
The catalyst of this. Hey, everyone, it's Lucas. I'm sorry to jump in, but I thought it was important to come and say this. You know, I'm often asked, why do we always talk about Kim and Brian Walker and shop marketing pros on the show? It's because we genuinely believe in their product. Why do I use them for my own marketing? In fact, they're building me a new website right now. It's not cookie cutter. I kept getting on Facebook and every shop looked the exact same. I didn't want to be that. And it's not just that. It's that they're part of your team. When you hire them to do your marketing, they get to know you. They know what you believe. They know what you say, and they know why you do what you do. And they share that with your clients. That's huge. And beyond all of that, probably the most important factor in all of this is they stand behind their work. So don't wait. Go today and get your free marketing analysis from Shop Marketing Pros. They're genuinely our friends, and they're genuinely here to help shop owners have a better life. Click on the link in the show notes for your free marketing analysis today. That's right. It's free. Doesn't cost you a dime.
It's channeling in a lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. And so like so much of what our industry is right now is because Paul had his hand in it. You know what I'm saying?
But the funny thing is when I met him at the bar, I'm walking up to him and he's like, no, I heard about you. But he said more words. He's like, I heard about you. Get away from me, Oz. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, dude, I heard about you. Please stay away from me. And I was just like,
Paul, what'd I do?
Well, yeah, what's going on? He's like, you always tell everyone to drink tequila. And I was like, well, you're not going to drink one with me? So, yeah, we took a shot. Well, more than one just shot. So,
right.
Yeah, it was a fun night, man. That is, Paul is an amazing person.
He is. Dude, he really is.
He is an amazing person. Just, I always tell everyone, when you meet Paul, just don't fanboy it. Just talk to him like a normal person.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really cool, man. When you just
next level human being, right there,
for sure.
I mean, absolutely next level human being. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And you know, that brings us back around. You've done some. You've used your channel for good in a lot of ways, and you've done a lot of things for a lot of people. And you've had the giveaways, and you've done all that stuff. What's the catalyst for that? Like, what drives you to do that?
It's just this industry, man, just the people I see here, the people I meet here, I don't know. They're not friends. They're family to me. Every time I come to these events, I'm like a little boy. Even my wife, she's like, she'll play around with me. She'll be like, all right, go play with your friends. Because it's just that connection that we have, man. Yeah. It's just beautiful, man. Even right after COVID, I just remember when they finally opened it up. Dude, I left my wife in the car. Like, I just ran over here.
Right.
Just saw Tommy, saw everyone, just hugged them. And it was just an amazing event. And that's what, I just want more people to have that.
Yeah.
That kind of feeling. You know, the first time when I first came here, I was kind of scared, man. I didn't know who I was going to meet. Mike Mileski was one of the first people I met.
Yep.
And if he listens to this,
for sure. And like, man, I'm with you, because there's so many memories that I have at this show in particular, in ASTE. And it is really the pathway to making our industry better, truly making it better for the technicians in the industry, making it better for the service advisors in the industry, making it better for the owners and everybody. And so you did something really cool, because when at a time, and I'll tell you the backstory behind this. So my good friend Ben reaches out. They were expecting, but they had a good while before the baby was due. And he sends me a message and he says, hey, guess I'm not coming to Vision. And I said, I'm like, I see him typing on Facebook. And then all of a sudden pops up this picture of his new little girl, right?
Yeah.
And she was born prematurely. And he's like, I can't leave. I have to be here. He's like, can you help me give this away? And I said, well, go make a post on Facebook. And so what you didn't know is that Ben had just reached out to me and he said, I see why more people don't do scholarships. And I said, what do you mean? He said, all of these people are wasting my time. They're telling me that, oh, yeah. I would love to go. I would love to go. And then I message them and they don't message me back. And then they finally do message, or I'll call them, and they won't know who this person is working at this shop. And I'll say, well, hey, you know, he applied to come to Vision and I was going to give a ticket away. And they're like, oh, there's no way that person could go. He said, I have literally spent 4 hours this morning trying to work through this. And then like minutes later, you send me a message and I'm like, ah. And so you facilitated somebody to come to Vision.
Yeah.
That got a free ticket, got a free trip to the dinner that Nathan's putting on. Man, that's phenomenal. Why did you do that?
So when we had the main giveaway, I worked with Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful person.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
For sure.
Yeah. And we had, I think it was like 250 entries for the main giveaway. And just all the entries, it was like, I think it was 1,000 words or less just to write in.
Yeah.
And I could just see the passion. The passion that all these technicians that really wanted to make it to Vision. So I got to that point where there's this one guy, he kept on messaging me.
Yeah.
Please, I really want to go. And I was like, look, man, we have a panel that we have to go through.
Yeah.
I can't.
It's up
just,
to them. Yeah, I can't override it.
Yeah, I can't override that. And then we picked our winner. The first winner that got it, he backed out.
Okay.
Then I called this other guy. He made it. The one who kept on contacting me, he was third in place. So that day that you put that post,
yeah,
I called him and I was just like, Jesse, If I could tell you right now that you can go to Vision, we can get you some tickets to the training event, would you go? And he's like, are you serious? He's like, I'm going to meet up with a realtor today. Are you joking with me? And I was like, no, I really need to know. It's not set in stone, but would you make it? And he's like, give me about 5 minutes. I was like, all right, I will call you exactly in 5 minutes. And that's when we were texting.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I called him, he's like, we're looking for plane tickets. We're ready to go. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Those kind of people I want.
The people who are fired up and ready to do it. Yeah. And so I was like on the road to the airport, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I don't know if there's any way we have enough time to make this happen, right? And so it was so crazy that it actually worked. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I will commit to if you want to send somebody to Vision or to ASTE, I guess it's ASTA Expo this year. You gonna bless make you. It? Bless you, buddy.
That looks just got rough. Choked up about this Vision story.
He could hold it in.
I will cover the attendance for one person.
Awesome.
To send them to the ASTA Expo.
Awesome.
And so I will pay for that to send somebody.
Yeah,
so,
we'll work something out, man.
For sure. What do you hope that when talking about that guy that was able to come, what do you hope that he walks away with?
Same thing that we all did when we first came here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm really hoping for. You know, just the excitement. I don't know. That's what I got out of it. You know, when I first came to this event, it was that excitement.
Right.
I'm just looking forward to all these training events. That's the main thing. And you can talk, if you talk to the regulars that come here a lot, sometimes they say, well, you know, we've already taken the same classes over and over, but it's just the people that we meet.
Yeah.
And that's where we get excited as well.
For sure. I think I get the most value out of these events from the networking and sitting around and talking. And you know, I tell people all the time, the events are really to help you understand that you're part of something much bigger. Mm-hmm. And this is a much bigger industry than you think it is. And there's a whole lot more going on than you think is going on. And I think there's so much opportunity. You network with a lot of technicians, right? Your primary following is technicians. Our primary following is shop owners. And so a lot of the shop owners, especially ones that listen to the show, are the top of the top. They want to make things better. They want to improve the shops. What are you hearing from the technicians when you talk to them? Are there pain points that they're feeling right now that we're not covering? You know, we talk a lot about wages and we talk about benefits and we talk about paid time off and we talk about all these things. Are there areas that you think we're missing it in the industry?
Most of the technicians that I talk to, the only thing that they really, you know, the only thing that they talk about is just, can they pay for our training? That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, hands down, that's the only thing that they really kind of complain about.
Well, and you know what's so interesting about that is we had five or six shops in the Change in the Industry group that were talking about, hey, we've paid for their training. Mm-hmm. We're offering to take them to AST. We're offering to take them to Vision. We're offering to take them to STX. And they won't go. And so, like, how do you – and is that just a case of the wrong technician? I mean, what is that?
I would say so because, look, I did go to – I'm not going to say what training event I went to. It was over there in Houston.
Yeah.
The instructor was he's trying to just be more comical than anything.
Yeah.
And after class, I went up to him and I was just like, hey, dude, I'm here to learn.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, we have a contract with the city of Houston that brings us 90% of the students here.
Right.
So if I don't keep them entertained, we lose that contract.
Oh, that's crazy, dude. Dude, that's an issue.
That was nuts, dude.
Yeah. The fact that they're too worried to actually teach.
Was there just not any substance to this training? Because, I mean, you can be entertaining and also teach something. Like, it doesn't have to be exclusive.
Yeah, but most of the people that are going to those training events are just, you know, knuckle busting, that kind of stuff. They don't want to know about all the technical stuff.
Yeah.
It was kind of sad that one time I went to this training event that SMP was offering.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lab scope class. That was my first lab scope class.
Yeah.
Guess how many students were there?
How many?
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah. We see it.
Yeah. And the second student, so it was me and this other guy, he went there because his wife made him go there.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was complaining the whole time, why am I going to scope something if I can just change out this part?
Yeah.
He's not wrong. He just changed out, see if it works.
It's cheap enough. Come on, man. We got to roll out this car.
But hold on, though.
Yeah.
All right. We had this discussion at my shop the other day. I have a pickup in the shop. It's an 86 Toyota, mm-hmm. and it has no fire. Okay. And I said, look, because this system is so simple, right? Instead of dragging a scope card over here, 90% of the time, it's the pickup and the distributor that's bad. If not, like, you've got an igniter, a coil, and the pickup. That's all there is to this system. And the amount of time that we can actually test it,
with a test light, though.
You can.
Okay.
You can. And so we put a pickup in it, and because I did not have a pickup signal, right? Put a pickup in it, doesn't fix it. And I was like, man, okay. So we gommed around with it a little bit. And I just for poop's sake, threw an igniter in it. I knew the coil was good, and it still didn't fix it. And so you enter into the world of automotive parts today. Guess what? The new parts were both bad.
You're talking about the 86 Toyota. Like, you're getting the most, like, Chinesian parts ever. You're not going to get a quality part for an 86 Toyota.
My point is that as bad as parts have gotten right now, there is no chance that I'm going to do Swaptronics, because mm-hmm. there's a good chance I'm not going to fix it with the new part either.
No, maybe. I had the location that I opened my first shop in, or I first opened in, there was a Euro shop in there, and he moved to like a couple doors down from me, and he would bring me cars, and he's like, hey, can you diagnose this? Okay, yeah, we'll give it a shot. We'd tinker around with it, and we're like, well, it looks like this thing here is power ground, it's not working. And he's like, well, okay, go ahead. We're going to go ahead and send you one from Worldpack. If it doesn't fix it, just put it back in the box. We'll send it back to them. That's how they dealt with their diagnostics. They just kept throwing parts at it. They'd put the part on. Hey, does it work? No. Take it back out. Put it back in the box. Ship it back to Worldpack. Worldpack took it back. This went on for years. Years and years. Smokes. Yeah. So that's how they managed it.
Dude, you would not believe how many shops in my community do just that. And I have talked to a number of the other folks in my community, and they will openly tell you, like, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I want to do. There's one particular shop. I won't say it's in my community. It's nearby. And all of their employees, none of their employees are paid on the books. They're all paid cash, right? None of them are technicians. And I'm asking him, like, hey, what's the logic behind that? Like, it's kind of hard to fix cars like that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. These aren't true professional technicians there. And he said, man, I make all my money in tires and brakes. I have zero reason. I have zero need to do any of that. I'm not interested in it. I was like, right. But everybody in town calls you the best auto repair shop in town. He's like, man, if it's something simple, he said, if it's complex, we send it to you. He said, if it's something simple, we like change a couple parts, and if it doesn't change anything, we send it to you. He's like, that doesn't bother me. That, like, you say me guessing like it's a bad thing. It's a good thing for me. I'm okay doing that. I'm happy doing that. I make money doing that. And I'm like, yeah, but like the industry as a whole, that looks bad for all of us. Now the clients come to us and they're completely content with what just happened. They don't have a problem with it. And I shared that thing this morning from a client of ours who said that was the only time I felt like I actually paid a testing fee and got my money's worth. Right.
So does he charge diagnosing that one shop?
No. They bring the car in and he changes parts. And if it doesn't run, then he bills them for the parts he put on it and sends it out. That's how they work.
But if he can't figure it out, he sends it to you, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever had it where... this happened to me actually twice, where a customer came over. I gave him my diagnosing price per hour. They said no. They took it to the shop down the street, which I work for. And then that car came over to my shop.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, it has happened.
And
it has happened
so many times. And I'm still charging diagnosing. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I'm not bringing the price down. And I'm still charging that shop the diagnosing fee. Right. I don't know what he said to get him in the door or where he's going to move the diagnosing fee and move it around. But that was kind of crazy. But the only other thing I don't like is that now he is the shop that everyone loves because –
he's fixing the car.
He's fixing the car. And this other shop right here, Oz, wants to charge me $150 an hour for Diag.
You think that it's possible he got a brake job and maybe a lower control arm and he maybe padded that a little bit to offset.
Oh, no. This was mainly Diag. It was an electrical problem.
He wasn't doing anything else on the car?
No. Hmm. But sometimes they'll just make up stories and they'll say, it was underneath the dash and we had to pull it out. That's $1,200 or whatever.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Like, you can't, like, it's these people so flippantly lie just to, you see what I'm saying? Like, well, it's not really hurting anybody. We get paid. The car's fixed. So who cares that we're telling them we pulled the dash out? Yeah, but you didn't pull the dash out. You didn't do any of that. Like, you're lying to the customer.
Yeah.
Like, and that's wrong no matter how you slice it.
You're okay with that. Well, I don't know. I can't do it. I can't do it.
We see that.
I deliberately tell my employees, I'm like, oh, I'll just tell them this. Like, don't tell them that. Do not lie. We don't lie. He's like, okay, I'll say it like this. I'm like, oh, well. You're okay there.
We've seen so much of that move to by a lot of these shops is the move to we're not going to charge you to do testing. Mm-hmm. And so they bring the car in. They find the easy work on the car. They might actually do testing for one specific problem. But if it's complex, they just send it out. And so why is that? Well, it's because we're not in a model where we're charging enough for testing that – it's profitable, right? Does that make sense? In other words, like, because if you look at testing, let's say that, for instance, in my shop right now is a car that got hit by lightning, okay? Cool. And it was a mess, and it was a friend of ours' car, and the son had been driving it. It's an Audi TT, and this was in a lot of turmoil in this family, and they were going through some real serious, really scary stuff. And I said, let me just buy the car. Right.
Yeah.
We had played around with it a little bit. Eric initially thought that it was just the cluster, and the cluster was dead, no doubt about it. But once we put the cluster in it, we started finding like more and more and more. Once one's been hit by lightning, dude.
Yeah.
It's all bets are off. Right. And so as that plays out, Noah's been working on this week, and Noah's spent better than 20 hours to get down to the point that he's got the dash out of the car. And he's found one connector with one wire in it that was the whole root of the problem. When it got hit, it melted the connector together, and it melted two wires together in the connector. I'll show you a picture of it here in a minute.
And so how would you charge that if a customer walked in?
Right. And so even if you do, let's say that you charge $150 an hour, and you work on it for 20 hours. Well, the problem is that a typical repair shop is like a 1.85 to 2.0. parts to labor ratio. Mm-hmm. So in other words, like it's 1-to-1 somewhere. So it can't right
be
in there.
150. It needs to be.
It would have to be 300 to make up the same amount of money for doing the testing. And so David,
if it actually takes up 20 hours of shop time and like actual bay time, 20 hours, it's going to have to be 300, or not exactly 300, but like $285.
Right. And so if you look at that, and now you're saying, okay, well, so all of these technicians have built so much into their life of, I want to be able to do the most complex diag and fix the most complex cars. And I think in training, a lot of this education system that we've built is trying to encourage them to learn this really complex task. And we say, well, we need a techs that can do high-end diag. But now the market is not really there to pay them, right? Because most consumers are unwilling to pay for that testing. You got shops that are siphoning out the gravy work, and they're taking that. They're not even interested in doing testing. And then the shops that are doing testing are saying, well, I can't really pay that guy $150,000 a year to do my least profitable type of work. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so David and I had a really in-depth conversation about that last night, and talking a little bit about how, and I maybe you best take the way you explained it, but he says, we're coming back from dinner, and he's like, I'm not saying anything about that on another podcast because people already hate me for the last time I said something.
But, I literally said that to him. He's like, yeah. You know, I'm going to bring it up on the very next podcast we do.
Yeah. No, this is the second one.
But in your area, how many other shops actually charge for diagnosing? Like,
I've got two other shops within 50 miles of me that charge for testing.
Mine all do. They may not actually do any diagnostic testing, but they'll slap diagnostic fee on the ticket for $100 or $150. But that's always been the mentality. The mindset's always been like, well, we're going to scan it. It's a crank sensor code. We're going to unplug it. The wires look okay. We got power and ground. And then we're going to throw the sensor on there, and it'll be diagnostic fee $100, R&R, crank sensor, and the car goes.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's been the majority of diagnostic work right up until like maybe early 2010s. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, cars got stupid. And they get getting stupider and stupider and stupider. And now they are so stupid. And the consumer doesn't know. The consumer doesn't understand. Hey, you know that Google thing that's on your dash? It's talking to 80 other things. Really? Yeah, they're all talking together. And guess what? That one there goes down. It takes down like 7 other ones. But we don't know which one because there's 7 in the line. And by the way, we have 4 different networks on this one car. Networks? Yeah. Anyway, it's going to be $600 for me to even look at the car. Well, I don't understand. The shop down the street told me they could do it for $150. Okay, take it down there. See what happens. Then he gets mad at me that I'm dad voicing the customer because that's how I would say it. Go ahead and take it down there. See what happens. I'm just telling you right now, they don't have a flipping clue what I just said. Yeah. Just like you don't, I understand, but you're not the mechanic. They need to know this stuff. They don't. So what are you going to do? Oh, I guess I'll just leave it there. Okay, then, $600. Go ahead and approve it. Make sure you click the yes on Shopware.
Because
I don't want to get into that mess.
What really helped me out was I got to the point where I was the specialty shop.
Yeah.
That's what really helped it out. Because if you're that normal mechanic shop or normal repair place, and you're going to tell them, hey, we're going to charge you X amount for diagnosing, with they put you in the same tier as the next shop down the street.
Yeah.
That's a regular maintenance place or mechanic shop, whatever. And they're like, well, they're not charging, so why the heck are you charging? But now if you're that specialty shop,
yeah,
and you're known for being a diagnostician, that's when they know. It's like going to the doctor and all that.
You get the specialist. And
yeah, but take a step back and look at it and go, if you didn't have the name recognition, like you're also the guy on YouTube. You're like, you're famous.
But not in my area. They don't know me as a YouTuber, to be quite honest. They know me as the guy who fixed the car. Who's going to get it fixed.
So here's the other side of that, though, right? Is that...
But a simple Google search is going to come up with it. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's not... There's a guy named I think he calls himself Mechanic OC.
Okay.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
I haven't checked it out, but I'll look him up.
He's been on YouTube for forever.
Okay.
He's been on YouTube for, anyway, he opened up a shop, and he considers him like, he does like 17 different things. It's not, I just own a shop, because he's like a one-man shop. But he's a one-man shop that also has like, I've got a clothing line, and I do this, and I do real estate, and he's one of those kind of guys. Anyway, if you look up his shop, he's got a Yelp review. He's in California, so Yelp, right? And the Yelp's like, no wonder my car took a month to get back. He's on YouTube doing YouTube videos all the day long.
I think and I remember these some 7 about that.
Other businesses. He can't get.
I guess my question for you then becomes, as a specialty shop, mm-hmm. you have to be comfortable charging those extra hours and charging those extra dollars.
Everybody is. That's the point.
Right.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that.
But there's a lot who are saying, hey, I want to follow in these footsteps. And they were technicians turned owners. And then they don't, right? Mm-hmm. And they get to the point that they want to be heroes and they want to fix the car. And so now, guess what? They get this car and it's a complex problem. Audi TT been hit by lightning.
Yeah.
And they spend 60 hours on it. And we don't fix the car, or we spend 60 hours, we don't charge the client. You know what I mean? And like, so I think there has to be a step where we normalize, especially with the consumer, that modern automobiles are expensive to fix.
For sure.
And there's a cost associated with that that we don't necessarily control. Yes, we could charge you less, but I still have to be profitable. Right. The business still has to make money. I'm not doing this for my health, and I'm not doing it for good looks, because God sakes, look at David.
Handsome guy.
Yeah.
I had a cardboard cutout of myself. Thank you very much.
Thank God they blurred it up. Did you see that? Did you?
Yeah, I did see that.
You notice that Monique points out like midway through this thing. She's like, have you really looked at your cardboard cutout? Yeah. And I was like, really looked at it? And she's like, come with me. Uh-huh. Look really close. Mm-hmm. And so like when the picture was taken, there was like a shadow near my crotch. So it looks like there's this wet spot on my crotch. And she's like, do you know how many people have touched your crotch because of that tonight? And I'm like, oh man. I kept turning around and looking, and people were pointing at my crotch taking pictures.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I gotta go check it out.
No, I gotta see those pictures. Standard pictures. That's hilarious.
No, but so like if a customer brings this car over to my shop and it's, let's say, pre-2004,
yeah,
I'm gonna deny that job.
Yeah.
To be quite honest.
For sure.
You gotta know which jobs you're gonna take. Which mm-hmm. where you
2004? Very specific. Why?
Yeah, well, that's the year I went to school in 05, and we worked on 05 and up. And I don't know, just older vehicles, I just don't feel as comfortable. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Just older vehicles.
I'm at 2000 like right now. Is kind of where
generational, because a 2000 Dakota comes in your, you stay away from that mother effer. You stay away from that vehicle.
Have you had a bad experience?
Oh my goodness. Distributor, 2000 Dakota. I don't care if it's a 2000. That's a no. But when they switch body styles and they go to the newer setup, it's like, okay, well, I'll do that. The Durango, when they actually made the first Durango, was also that second-gen Dakota or whatever, that third-gen Dakota. But the older ones, the distributors, like, hell no, because I've tried.
Yeah.
They're not fixable. And they have ghosts in the machine.
Have you ever worked on like those 80s with all the evap lines everywhere?
Yeah, dude.
Those are fun. You know.
And
I can tell you went to school in the 2000s. Yeah, I can tell just from you're like, what is all this? Those are vacuum lines. To do what? Everything. Why not run wires? We didn't have wires back then.
You don't have defrost if that line's busted. Well, you know, those are valid points, and I think that
an old school like 80s Japanese car that when they first got fuel injection. Hell yeah,
they can be cool cars, okay. But it comes down to, why does the consumer own the car? Right. If that consumer owns the car because they can't afford anything else, then they probably can't afford for me to solve its problems. Yeah. If the consumer owns the car because this was my wife's first car and I really love it and she's not with us anymore and I want to, that's a different conversation, right? Yeah. I see too many shops trying to be the hero, and we've put so much emphasis on this high end diag and all of the high end diag training that we do that it may have created an illusion that in our current state, the way we're doing things, diag is profitable, and that's where the money's at, and we all need to train to be better diag techs. But if we don't either start charging more or come up with a different strategy for handling this, we're training techs for positions that don't exist. Now, shops think they exist.
No. We're training techs towards a skill that does not make any money.
Right. Well, I mean, that's why I'm saying the position doesn't really exist. The position
still is needed.
Yeah.
And it's a high skill. It's a high-skilled position. Takes a ton of education to get there. Doesn't make you a dime.
because the consumer doesn't see value in it. So how do we fix
it? It's like having a double doctorate in dance theory, lesbian dance theory. Now
that's some interesting dance theory, David.
Now you can drop $150,000 in schooling to get your double doctorate in lesbian dance theory. But are you going to get your money back? Other than becoming an instructor in lesbian dance theory, or I'm going to get you your doctorate in lesbian dance theory.
I talked to an instructor one time, and he said that liberal arts, that they had this program that was all liberal arts. And he said, do you know that approximately 98% of those that graduated with a liberal arts degree from that university ended up working in the fast food industry? And I'm like, dude, what? He's like, swear to God, that's the number.
Dude, so this is what my dad told me, told my brother. Damn, I know this sounds messed up. So my dad came from first, everyone's from Mexico. He's the only one that came over to the United States. Mm-hmm. And he told
me. I'm not Mexican, by the way, Lucas. I know you heard that and you're like, yeah.
David is too.
I knew it.
So when he came over, he told my brother, he's like, hey, what you need to do is go to the classes that the Asian people or Indian people are going to. And I was like, Dad, that's kind of messed up. So I remember my brother, he graduated in an arts degree. And I think 98% of the names were Johnson, Smith.
Yeah.
And then when they had the graduating class for all the doctors and all that, it was all the Indian and Asian names. And I was like, holy smokes.
He was onto something.
Yeah,
he was onto something. He was 100% onto something.
He said, yeah, because the other, you know, from other nations that come over here, they see the opportunity and they jump on it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
They jump on that.
Well, they've never had opportunity like that. And I don't know.
What are you talking about? You're nuts. They have schools there too. Own doctorates.
So I watched this video the other day. I don't know how I came across it. And it's three Indian guys, and they're sitting in front of the school that they attended in India. And they tell their story about this massive corporation that they started. And they came to the U.S. and they got their PhDs. And they all came together and they said, everybody else comes here, and they end up staying here in the U.S. And they work in their field, and they have all of these opportunities, all of these things. And they tell their story about why it was they chose to go back to India. It was extremely fascinating. And they started like a marketing company. But it's unbelievable, like the story of how they got there and the work that they did to be able to get to the U.S. financially, to be able to go to school here, right? And I'll never forget one of the things he said was, he said, I had to recognize that by me coming back to India, that I would never make the amount of money that I would have made if I stayed in the U.S. He said, I had six-figure offers in the U.S. that I will never have coming back here. I came back here because I love my country. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that is a really insightful way to look at that education system. Because, I mean, he talked about the pathway just to get to the U.S. to get that education was insane, right? And we've talked
to – Now all you have to do
– is walk in the
it's just yeah, and then they'll give you a bus ride and a debit card and you get dropped off somewhere in New York.
That's only for the Chinese.
Well, yeah, mostly Chinese.
That's really interesting.
These
are wealthy Chinese people coming across the border.
Well, that's for a specific reason. They've got an agenda.
You think so?
Well, because they started finding out what was going on in the universities. Because they were also coming in as exchange students. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this?
No, I don't even watch the news. That's the thing.
Oh, God. Yeah. We set David off. I'm sorry.
Hold on. We don't watch the news yet. I don't watch the news. Who watches the news? But also, do you have any kids?
One.
Okay. So your kid is going to be like, hey, I'm going to go to University of Texas, Pasadena. I don't know what schools they have down there. But I'm just...
And you're kind of close.
Okay. So you're going to...
Within 10%.
And you're going to have no idea why the entire classroom is just Chinese kids. Uh-huh. And they're not native-born Chinese kids. They are Chinese kids from mm-hmm. China. And you're like, what the hell is going on? Well, that's the thing. And they're infiltrating the state schools. Mm-hmm. Anyway... We won't go down that rabbit hole. It depends. It depends on what part of the country they emigrate to, because your dad, had he land? Is he from Mexico? Yeah. Did he come over?
Yeah, everyone, yeah. I was born in Mexico.
Okay,
we're all born in Mexico. Yeah,
you guys are purebreds. That's why he's so successful. I don't like the mud.
Should we point out that you have tonal privilege? Is this where we're supposed to say this in this episode?
I don't think he knows, which is going to freak him out a little bit, because I'm going to say super racist stuff, and he's going to be like, I don't think he's supposed to say that. It freaks people out. Anyway,
you're sitting with the only dude in the country who's willing to walk into a restaurant and explain that he has tonal privilege. It's okay.
Tonal privilege. And I explained that to Carrie. It freaked her out too. Anyway, had he gone to a different part of the country? Had he not gone to Texas? I'm just telling you right now. This is how it goes. Had he gone to California?
That's where he started off at.
And stayed there. Uh-huh. And not gone anywhere else. And how old?
20. He was working with my grandfather
for a little while, but then they ended up settling in the Northeast. There, you talk to anybody, not born here, but moved in, right? What do you need to do? All of it is centered around going to college or university. Mm-hmm. All of it. You just got to get your degree. In what? They don't tell you. You just got to get your degree. Well, you got to make sure. So you can do what? I can get a good job with really good benefits. Okay. Who's going to hire me? And what degree in what exactly? Like, what am I supposed to be doing here? They don't tell you. You just got to get a degree. Everybody obsessed with getting degrees. My cousins, they all have degrees. Why? Because their parents settled in the Northeast and they all got told, you got to go to school. You got to get a great degree. And what? I don't know. Anyway, get a good job so you can have some good benefits. That was it. Everything was centered around there. At no point did the words, maybe start a business. Figure out what you're really good at and that you get up every single morning excited to do and go do that. Figure out a way to make money doing that. It's 1,000 opportunities now. We have the internet. It's great. Internet's cheap. And devices are cheap. You can figure something out. Those words never came out. And then also, we're in like 80s and 90s. That wasn't a thing. But it wasn't like, hey, go down to the library and figure out what you're good at. I used to love to draw. That was my thing. Like, mm-hmm. I told my parents, I'm like, I'm going to be a comic book artist. Because that's what I wanted to do. And it wasn't like, okay, let's figure this out. Let's make you a comic book artist. Who do we need to, like, practice this many hours a day? Send your work in. Let's figure out who we need to send it to. The big studios. Maybe you can get a small publication to pick you up so you can do some art. Maybe you send them different things. No. It was that you need to go to college so you can get a good job with those bennies. You know what my mom did? She went to college. She got a degree, an absurd degree that she's.
What was it?
Sociology. She has a master's in sociology. You know what sociologists make? Social workers make nothing. They make nothing. I pay everybody in my shop more than the average social worker makes. She has a master's from Boston University. Do you know how much it costs for one flipping year of Boston University?
60 grand, what, 80?
Yes. 1 year. She's got 2 years in there because it was a master's degree. She got her bachelor's, and then she's like, I'm going to get a master's degree because I got to get a good degree so I can get a good job with benefits. And then she became a social worker.
Dude, it's because everyone has a mentality, you have to go to college. You have to go to college.
It's depressing.
It was kind of funny, actually. I took a psychology class, I think my second or third year in college, and then I changed my degree. And then I came back that next year to my psychology teacher. I ran into her and I was like, hey, just want to let you know that I'm actually going to change my degree to a psych major.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't do that. Please do not do that. And I was like, why? It's like, you changed my life. This is, I want to do this. And she's like, honey, please, if you can do me a favor, go over there and change your degree and find something that you love. Unless you want to become a teacher or someone that's getting paid minimum wage.
Right? Right?
Like, what are you going to do? Like, I can make money, right? It's like, yeah, teaching other people to do this. Like, that's it. Yeah. There's nothing else. It's such a scam.
I don't like schools, man. And they teach you some classes that just don't make any sense. Art appreciation. I'm sorry if I'm offending someone that really loves art, but you know, all those other classes, finite, this and that. Show us some taxes.
Yeah, dude, for real.
That should be on. That should be a course, man. No,
David wants you to teach the history of the Tea Party, and David needs some explanation of all this because this just doesn't jive with him.
I don't want to teach how to do taxes. That's a terrible.
Well, I'm just talking about learning a little bit about taxes. We don't know anything about taxes, and they're expecting that they're going to throw us out and then just say, okay, here.
No, that's how they want us, though. They want you to go, hey, you don't need to know how to do this. Just take this little piece of paper down to that office that says H&R Block, and they'll give you back money. What? Yeah. You worked all year. You need your refund. Oh, okay. So you go down there and you're like, I got $4,000. $4,000 for what? Oh, well, I went down there and got my taxes done. That sounds
too good to be true.
Like, do you understand that you just, that means you overpaid by $4,000. You just gave them an interest-free loan for $4,000.
They're probably going to come find us at some point. You know that, right?
Let them come.
The IRS people are going to be knocking on the door.
You know what's fascinating? So I'm from the Northeast, right? Okay. We went up there. We went up there, and you can resonate with this because of what you went through with the whole like parking lot thing. That was you, right?
Yeah.
That was your whole thing, man.
Still dealing with it.
Oh, man. Really?
Yeah.
Still dealing with it. You're a better man than I, because I would have definitely gone down the Killdozer route. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. That would have been me. That would have been Killdozer 2.0. Dave Roman, the parking lot situation. Are you familiar with the Killdozer?
No.
His eyes glazed over when I said Killdozer, because he was like, okay. No, I'm like, I don't think he knows. We'll let you start research that one on your own. Anyway, we'll talk after. Anyway, so
David doesn't want to give up his plans.
No, with a grenade. What are you talking about? What? It's all plans. It is the saddest and also the most inspiring story in modern American history. But we go up to Boston, and my wife surprised me with some tickets to go see the Celtics. I'm a big Celtics fan, right? And so we were up there, and I love museums and history and stuff like that. Not like warships. Those are stupid. But I love fighting.
For a man backed into the corner, how many times am I going to have to say that this week?
So we went and visited where the first shots of the American Revolution, like where it actually happened, the field. We were in the field, walking around taking pictures of rocks. Because they had on there at this place, at this date, you know, this happened. It was absolutely fascinating. But they have an entire exhibit, which is the most absurd thing, that this is in Boston, in Massachusetts. Like, the nickname of the state was Taxachusetts. Like, that was the thing. Because everybody just kind of knew, if you go into Massachusetts, they're going to tax the living crap out of you. Because they nickel and dime you over every little thing. Everything is higher in Massachusetts because of the taxes. So a lot of people just go shopping in New Hampshire or whatever. Anyway, we go in there, and I'm walking through the old state house, and there's just all these displays about how the Revolutionary War was set off. And the things that they would do to these people just for showing up at their door going, hey, so the king across the ocean said, you need to pay taxes on those paper goods that you just, so we're going to need this money. Mm-hmm. And what they would do to those people, just for asking. And they did it out in the open and perfectly public, and totally everyone was cool with it, going, yeah, screw that guy. Go hang him from a tree.
And now we're in this world where we've like created something worse than what would have been if it never happened.
We not only did we backtracked to now that it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, we gotta pay my fair share, and you just whip, and then now it's like you're seen as evil for not, like, for following the tax code and avoiding as much as you can. You're seen as a, why aren't you paying your fair share? Mm-hmm. They need to pay more.
And you know where? Okay, so
you need to run for mayor of that town. That's what you need to
someone
do.
Someone actually told me that.
Hey,
someone actually brought that up, and they're like, "We will endorse you." And I was just like, "Dude, I have so much on my plate.
I will contribute to your campaign.
Yes, I will too.
Now, honestly, God, I have so much on my plate right now. It's just
crazy. We will drop it in the Facebook group, and so it's like small $25 donations. We need to make sure this man wins.
Yeah, they brought it up. It was actually last year. I went to one of the counts. Someone brought it up. Yeah, someone brought it up, and he's like, "I will endorse you and all that." And, he's like, "Think about it. Get back to me the next week, and we'll talk." And it's just with the newborn and shop and YouTube and all that good stuff. It is.
So, where do we stand right now? What give a little bit of the background, because I think we need to at least. Since you brought it up.
How does everybody not know this story already? I guess he didn't know Killdozer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If anybody listening to this doesn't know Killdozer, then you need to look that up.
Yeah. I'm still, I want to hear that story. So after this, we'll talk about it. So, yeah, I've been leasing, what was it? Two shops. So my first shop was a one bay garage, only two parking spots. Then after a couple of years, I moved to an actual shop because this one was in a business center.
Yeah.
So my dad was always helping me out. He would find the shop for me, and finally we got this one shop that I'm actually in right now. It's a two bay garage, and it has like maybe four parking spots. I've always wanted to own a shop myself, not just rent one out. I want to own one. And finally the owner, he raised the rent, and I just told my dad, "Hey, let's just go drive around and let's see what we can find."
Yeah.
And we're driving around the Pasadena, and right at the last moment, I was about to say, "Let's go back home and let's just we'll do it tomorrow." Once we were about to turn, he's like, "Just go straight." And we just went straight for maybe less than 20 seconds, and right on the left hand side, I see a building right there.
Yeah.
For sale. So we walked in, just looked at it. And my dad's like, "We need to get this machine shop." Walked in there, talked to the guy. "Hey, how much are you looking for?" And he's like, $100,000. And I was just like, "Would you do 90?
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah, let's do this." We shook hands, and I was just like, "Dad, I just bought a shop."
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, $90,000. Yeah. And I was like, "What do I do now?" And he's like, "Let's go get a loan." So I went to the bank. The only thing they could offer me was a home equity loan. Mm-hmm. So my house is already paid off. So we use that. And they could only give me $86,000. Yeah. So I went back to the owner and I was like, "Dude, I only have $86,000. He's like, "Oh, okay, you're good." So I talked to everyone else and they're like, "Dude, I think you only bought the building. You didn't buy the land. There's something going on, or maybe he might be owing something, or something's going on."
Yeah.
No, when we went to the title place was clean.
It was legit.
Yeah, it was legit. But then once we got the location, like I said, I've already moved to two different locations. So when we got the location in there, it was pretty easy. Did my certificate of occupancy and then did all my inspections and so on. So we move into this. We're getting ready to, you know, start doing our certificates and so on. And they denied the CO. So they denied that. And I was like, "What's going on?" And she was like, "Because a change of
ownership.
Yeah. But the thing is that they didn't treat the machine shop as an automotive shop. So they said there are two different entities. And the machine shop was an office job."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at that point, that's when they just had a new ordinance that they put in that year. And that new ordinance was for every 100 square feet of the actual building, you got to put one parking spot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 2758, something like that. So that was 28 parking spots.
Mm.
And holy, if you heard, and you heard me before, how many spots did I have on my first location? Yeah. Two. And then my second location, three. And now you want me to have 28?
Yeah.
And I'm all a payment. I'm appointment based only. So specialty shop, you know, it's a quick turnaround. So that happened. We went to court. You know, lawyers just try to manhandle me, you know, try to scare me and all that. City's lawyers. But listening to a lot of Tony Robbins and all that kind of really helped me.
Ramp yourself up.
Yeah, ramp myself. Dude, I got to the point when we went to, I forgot what it's called, the first meeting where you sit down with them and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember driving over there and I was scared. And I just remember I actually turned on Tony Robbins at that moment, and he was talking about, you know, never veer away from what's in front of you.
Yeah.
He's like, you got to look it straight forward and go for it.
Face it head on.
Yeah, face it head on. There's one that he was talking about. He said he was doing a drifting class, and every time he would always turn his head when he's going straight to the wall to drift.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the instructor would actually pull his head forward to just, you got to... Yeah. The demons in front of you, you got to go through them. So that's what got me going through that. You know, I just, after hearing that, you know, we went through all the court cases, but now dealing with the city, they just have infinite amount of money.
Yeah. And you've kicked the hornet's nest now. So they're kind of.
How big is Pasadena?
It's pretty huge. Yeah. It's, put it this way, they have the largest volunteer firefighter, you know, in the mm-hmm. whole United States.
Hmm.
So it's a pretty big city.
Okay.
And they have a lot of funds. The public information that I've seen, they have a lot of funds. So someone small like me, in stature too, but dealing with the city of Pasadena, mm-hmm. you know, that's, but what I'm trying to do is, you know, since I was little, I've always been smaller and everyone has always tried to push me.
Yeah.
But I'd never let that, you know, down and then just walk away. No, if it's a bully or if it's the big city of Pasadena, we're going to keep on
push forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep on pushing forward. And the thing is, so my dad passed away last year.
Oh man.
Yeah. So it was a day after Vision where I flew back over there and got to be with him for the last day. And that was one of his main things. He wanted that shop to open.
Yeah.
And now that's my goal. Right. Just for him. And we have a picture over there, a little kind of mural of him at the shop because mm-hmm. he was always over there.
Mm-hmm.
From the day that we bought the shop to the day that we finished painting it, any contractor that was there, he was there making friends, talking to them, doing this and that. And you know, now we're doing it for him. And it was kind of crazy. The last couple of months, he knew something was wrong. And he was like, son, we got to get this going. Come on, come on, come on. Let's just open it up. And I was like, dad, all this litigation, we can't. I'll get fined and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was just, I knew something was up. He really wanted to open it up. Like he was pretty lenient the whole time, you know, through the process of fixing it up, you know, doing all the repairs and so on. But the last couple of months, he was just like, come on. And he was there. I remember doing the floor. He was on his knees trying to put some rebar in there. And I was like, dad, get up, man. Come on. But yeah, it was just, we're going to keep on fighting. That's all I can say. I'm not going to give up. But the thing is that the city, what they're trying to do, they're trying to make sure that I am done with my funds. They're going to keep on pushing it.
Yeah.
This might be another 2-3 years.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
They're going to start to starve you out. That's awful.
Yeah, but right now, and that's the thing.
Who's the ultimate? Like, you're trying to sue them and override the code enforcer, right?
Yeah, basically, like I said, in every other shop that I moved into, I'm not moving into an ice cream parlor.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
my location looks like an automotive shop.
Yeah,
I was not moving into. You know, a place, McDonald's or something like that. We're not making crazy changes.
Who's making the decision, though, to not give you the exemption?
The lady that runs this, the
codes office,
yeah,
right?
Codes office.
So you're trying to sue them for a judge to override her decision.
Yeah.
Who is she elected?
No, she's not elected.
Who puts her in place then? It's the yeah. So you're gonna have to. How often are the mayors getting turned around? 4 years?
I believe so, if I'm not mistaken.
Have you looked into that side of it and gone, okay, who's going to be running for mayor? I need to make contact and be like, hey, we need to make this part of your campaign.
Yeah, I've had some people come up to me and talk to me about it. I'm running for mayor. If I get elected, I'm going to help you out. But yeah, it's just everyone in that city loves that mayor. But it's really crazy because the way that he was promoting himself, he was there for the small businesses.
Okay, so why not go after him?
I have a lot in front of me right now. I just don't know.
I feel like somebody needs to be doing this for you, Lucas.
No, trust me. I got to the point where I was going to put all my energy towards that.
Yeah.
But right now, so this is what I've told everyone right now. I am treating that location as a savings account.
Yeah.
That's all I'm kind of doing because I'm just kind of putting money there. I'm building equity.
Sure.
Yeah. The building's worth a lot more than what I paid.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not freaking out as much. I have other stuff that's right in front of me and I'm putting all my energy towards that.
Right.
Which is going to keep me sane. If I keep on focusing over here on that building.
Yeah, you're not.
Which is not going to define me as a person.
I don't know. You're gonna lose your focus. You're gonna be distracted, and
you need to be our freedom fighter. I hate to tell you.
No, trust me. There's some stuff that I'm really looking into. But yeah, it's just it's a crazy road, man. My attorneys did call me about a month ago, and I was like, "Hey, so what's next?" And she's like, maybe about 10 months from now, we'll get an answer."
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. 10 months. They don't care. It's not their money.
Don't care. It isn't their money.
Luckily, my attorneys are wonderful. They're doing this pro bono. So
really?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's been helping out a lot. They're amazing people. But they did call me last year, and they just told me, look, Oz, if you want to, we can stop now. We just don't want you to be hurting so much financially.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
They're like, are you sure? No. Trust me. I'm doing okay.
We'll be all right.
Yeah, we'll be all right. I've been taking other ventures and all that, and it's been helping out a lot. So, I'm okay. That's why I tell everyone.
It's the principle of it at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And like I said, now I just want to do it for my dad.
Amen, buddy.
That's the main thing. I'm pretty sure he's looking down right now, and the day that we open is going to be an emotional day for the whole family.
Sure.
And everyone around us.
Is there something our listeners can do to help?
I don't know. I'm not a person that asks for stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm that person. If Christmas comes up, I'm just, give me a pair of socks. I don't care.
Right.
I just don't ask for stuff.
I understand.
Yeah. I feel like this is my battle.
Yeah.
And I'm ready for it. I'm not going to give up on it.
That's awesome, dude. Thank you for being here.
Oh, for sure, man. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, sir.
All right.
That was all. Thank you for listening to the Changing the Industry podcast. If you enjoyed the show, do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. And don't forget to set it to automatically download the latest episode. Our efforts with this podcast, the YouTube channel, and the Facebook group wouldn't be possible without the support of our awesome sponsors. So please take a moment, check them out by clicking on the links in the show notes.